Grandfather, I said, tell me a bedtime story. Addie, said Grandfather, it is late. You need to be asleep. School begins tomorrow. Just a short story, I pleaded. I knew the man had a soft heart. He would eventually give in and tell me a story if I stalled long enough. I learned that his stories held truth and meaning. He never recited the tales of Grimm or Mother Goose. Instead, he conjured up forgotten stories, bred from old myth, buried in the rubble of Earth. Those stories were like legends, strong and enchanting. All right, said the old man. I will give you one story, but then off to sleep you go. I snuggled down into my covers. Grandfather dimmed the lamp, and he pulled up a chair. This story, Adi, is called Memories. I couldn't remember who I was the day I became human. What were they supposed to say to me? I was so small. The only sounds I made were in petition for food. I remember the color of blue and the smell of my mother's perfume. I remembered when she held me so close, shushing my cries. Then my life flashed forward to a different shade of blue. My life was watery and stunk of chlorine. I tasted blood in my throat and I cried. I had fallen into our pool, having teetered too close to the edge. I was a stupid kid, of course. I didn't realize that I'd lose my balance, but I did, and in I went. There was a smack against the concrete, and that would have been my face, and a splash. My aunt rushed to the side of the pool, trying to pull me out. I slid in and out of consciousness. People stood over the top of me, worried. They asked if I was okay. They spoke in rushed voices, ordering someone to fetch a bandage, reassuring one another that it wasn't going to be so bad after all, reassuring that she won't need stitches, but that sure is a lot of blood. Later, when I played with my cousin, I remember spitting up blood from a broken wound inside of my mouth. My tongue was never the same because the webbing beneath it had split. I stuck it out a little farther than normal. I was absolutely reptilian. When I was a little older, maybe a little too mature too quickly, I remembered my schoolmates. They didn't like me much. I was quiet. I kept to myself. They pestered me. My peers enjoyed taunting me, making threats and pushing me around. I saved my tears for after school at home, somewhere in my mother's arms. I felt responsible for it, for their misconduct. I felt that I willed them to hurt me. But I couldn't explain why, and my mother soothed my worries. She said that I was being unfair to myself. She said that I shouldn't blame myself for the cruelty of other children. But I wasn't trying to place blame. I detected a suppressed ability deep in my soul, a greater power behind my eyes, one that suffocated with the aromatic choke of mortality. As a teenager, I tried to push people away. I hurt those around me, emotionally and physically. I got into fights. I was very rebellious and angry. I was cruel. I did not speak with tact, and when I wanted people to hate me, I succeeded. When I wanted people to like me, I was very persuasive. I spoke of my beliefs quite often. I grew up in a Catholic family, but during my teenage years, I acknowledged religion as personally offensive. I felt that these people couldn't grasp the magnitude of spirituality and a higher power. They insulted it with their misconceptions of what a god really was. Their god never measured up to the magnitude that was otherwise immeasurable. Oh yes, they claimed his immeasurability, but they yielded his greatness with their stunted spiritualism. They dwarfed his amplitude with tenets of abnormality. The small-minded tried to speak for enormity. How misguided! Years later, as I entered young adulthood, I did not yet calm down. I tampered with the delectations of the world. I fell into drugs, or more so, they fell into me. I smoked them and chewed them. I injected them and drank of them. I sold my body for them and, in the process, endured violence and suffering. Again I believe I willed it upon myself. I knew what I was getting into. I was the risk-taker, after all. But eventually, my brain grew inattentive, and I grew bored with indulgence. I retired from my ego, for it was a limited source of gamble. I read often, and I worked hard. My life was cleansed of its titanic journeys. However, my personal life was not so extraordinary. I fell in and out of relationships. At one point, I was married, but it did not last. I bore a child, but he too did not last. I must remark that the doctors were amazed by the birthing process. I felt no pain. I conceived a son and brought him into this world, but he barely lived a moment before he died in my arms. The child must have been minutes old as he drew his last breath. I did not want to admit this to the doctors, but I wished for his death. I only wanted what was best for my child. I sent him home, where he waited for my return. He was not the first son I had lost to the vicissitude of Earth. As my mortal life pressed on, I noticed how things fell into my grasp when I wanted them to. Practicing restraint against my preternatural soothsaying proved to be challenging. The accuracy of my foresight was unequivocal. I unraveled life with ease. My influence over inanimate objects grew stronger. There were moments I stormed into a room and angrily flipped a light switch. The bulb exploded, and I was covered in flakes of glass. Was hell at my fingertips? After a while, I noticed other things came to me as if I willed them. When I cursed myself, as all humans did, bad luck came my way. One day, I cursed in the middle of a store. I stormed through the aisles, shoved my way through the exit. As I continued to curse myself through the parking lot, I was struck by a car. Somehow, I survived. I healed up quickly, with little need for physical therapy. Doctors again were amazed. Pushing into my late 30s, I had a hard time concentrating on my own life. I was haunted by what happened around the world. I read news articles about murder, disease, and war. The elements of Earth were already abusive. Why would these intelligent animals self-abuse any further? I could not wrap my mind around it. They stunted the enormity of godship with ecclesiastical insignificance, yet they amplified their self-importance through exploit and torture. I became angrier and angrier with myself. Oh, how I blamed myself! Then one morning I woke up with a hefty sadness weighing down upon me. Calling in to cancel work, I sat in a corner and cried. Rain began to pour. It spattered against my window as my little black cat crept to me for comfort. At that point, I felt pain, a physical pain, very real and very lethal. The feeling coursed through me like a tapeworm, snaking its way around my brain and muscles, pushing and gnawing past my organs and bones. It bit and tore at my insides, and I began to choke. The thing inside of me was death. How death came to greet me at my beck and call, I pretended not to know, but deep within, I knew. I knew that death heard my command. He obeyed me, and he would pay attention to me, dear listeners. He would pay attention to me. I phoned my doctor. He scheduled an appointment within the hour. When I visited him, he could not immediately determine what was wrong with me. He ordered out CAT scans, blood work, and an MRI. I received my answer a few days later. "It seems," the doctor stammered, "that you have cancer spreading at a very fast rate. Treatment wouldn't even work at this point. The cancer is at a very advanced stage and in such a short time. I've never seen anything like it. The best thing to do now is to ease your pain. I'm sorry." I hung up. Before he had the chance to auction off drugs, his words fell quiet. I did not need them. I dropped to the floor of my empty home. Death, now inside of me, worked his magic. I controlled him, and I succumbed to his control over my body. Such is the way of powerful beings. I remembered the color of blue and the smell of my mother's perfume. I remembered making the clouds pour and the light bulbs burst. I remembered the zeal of narcotics poisoning me into relaxation. I remembered those who slept with me, beat on me, laughed with me, and I cried out my own name. This was the experience I chose. I experienced suffering through the mortal eye. Even in my final moments of death, I thought I was a human. I thought I was simply a creature of flesh, clinging to my fear of it, the unknown. But indeed, as I was released from my body, I collected my memories. It was like a rendezvous with an old lover. I nervously approached my memories, wavering in my reliance upon their oath. But the familiarity of their variegated iridescence persuaded me. They were a rainbow of ceremonious acquaintanceship. The first layer of memories hastened in bright colors of red and yellow. These were the fire, the stars, the heat. I had to have heat. In the beginning, I was cold. I needed to warm myself. And in that aggregation of all things warm, I found light. The second layer of memories approached slowly in the colors of blue and gray. They were the oceans, the lakes, the rivers, and the reflective sky echoing these colors back to Earth. The third layer was decorated with magnificent shades of green. It gave life to the vegetation and trees that dominated that little terrestrial sphere. Trees were dominant of all. They were gods in their own right. The final layer was black. Black was the soot of my canvas, providing the branch by which the ornament hung. It was the curtain drop at the end of your hour. Black, by recognition, was important. Without it, the colors lacked excellence. They lacked distinction. I remembered who I was. My craft, my aptitude and artistry, was that of an inventor. I was the prime architect, one who originated movement, the author of time. I remembered my experience with humans, how they loved me, hated me, and offended me. I remembered being dazzled by their inventions, how they aspired to be like me. They were creators too. Their world traumatized me. They too could be cruel and vengeful, just as I have been in all of my catastrophic glory. Sometimes they pretended to be very powerful. It was convincing. But they were only children, playing a game. I designed them, like a wizard looming over his cauldron. In that design, they were created from my image. I dare admit that my image was fearsome, and so they could be fearsome too. But some of them were kind, much like my mother. Some of them captured my best of moments, when glory and mercy shined down upon the loathsome, and in their suffering, they were forgiven. They were loved. I was happy to have lived as they lived. I was happy to return home.